Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Hello and welcome to the Niall and Nine podcast. It's myself, Niall, and Andre Cleary here. As ever, we are talking about music. We're talking about music that we love. This episode, Andrea, it's a bit of a deep dive, isn't it?
It's a little bit of a deep dive. So this is, as listeners will be aware, we do a monthly listening party in the Big Romance on the last Wednesday of every month called Listen Closely. And we do a kind of companion podcast to that album for people who like the album and want a bit of a taste of what's going to happen on the night, but also people who want to come on the night and maybe don't know very much about the album. So the album this month is Fiona Apple's Tidal. It is my choice. We both kind of take turns with picking an album, although we tend to be in agreement that they are good albums. But this one is my choice. Fiona Apple's debut album. Niall is nodding. Fiona Apple's debut album. So a bit of a deep dive, but maybe not in the same way, or maybe yes, in the same way. I'm not sure. Basically, what I'm trying to say is usually in the episodes like this that I've done in the past, Laurie Anderson, Sufjan Stevens, for example, I have a bit of a kind of a narrative or a kind of, you know, specific things I want to focus on. This, for this episode, I'm kind of all over the place. I kind of just want to talk about it, you know, and I want to talk about this time, and I want to talk about the 90s. And of course, I want to talk about gender and women. And I will say just up top, there will be references in this podcast to sexual assault and rape and also to eating disorders. I'm not going to go into any detail about either of them, but they will be referenced at some point during this podcast. So just so that listeners are aware of that. But yeah, it's an album that we're both familiar with. It's an artist we're both familiar with. You reminded me before we started recording that 4 years ago, nearly kind of to the month, recording our review of Fetch the Bolt Cutters, Fiona Apple's fifth album. So yeah, it feels timely, it feels right, it feels like a good time to kind of return to her debut album and just want to talk about it and just why we love it. Yeah. What's your history with this album, Niall?
You know, it's a 1996 album, therefore to me this is a very CD era album. It's one of those albums that maybe might have been, you might have initially encountered picking up in a living room or something like that, you know, that somebody had, probably more specifically the second album I would have heard, and that I distinctly remember when The Pawn came out, hearing that in a friend's house, or like pressing play on a CD and On the Bound coming on. So Tidal was, I guess, as well, like it's the MTV era, it's that kind of time. So Fiona Apple, well, she was an MTV artist in lots of ways, as we can, we maybe play a clip later on to explain some of that. But she did do, I was looking on YouTube, there's a lot of interviews with her on MTV programs from her first album on MTV2 and stuff like that, which, you know, I mean, looking back now, you're kind of like, she wrote that kind of wave of alternative music, but really she wasn't. She was always on her own. She always did her own thing. She was sure. I mean, she was maybe an LA artist or whatever, but like, and there's elements of her music that, you know, wasn't really alternative rock, but she was kind of put in that category because that's how things worked then. You know what I mean? Like, so you're thinking of, you know, somebody like there was a lot of people who were, you know, it was still a time when radio mattered in terms of breaking artists and stuff like that. And, you know, in 1996, somebody like Fiona Apple wouldn't have really fit on radio, but she did, was co-opted into the MTV generation for sure. And that's for you. Yeah, I mean, I knew the singles, I knew the videos as well. There was, you know, the Criminal video in particular was one that would come on, and maybe we might talk about that a tiny bit as well. So you were said you were very young when this first came out, so you didn't hear it then.
So, no, I think my history with this album was very much coming to it a bit later. As you said, came out in 1996. I was 5 at that time, so not really the target market for an album like Tidal. But I do have a memory of the Criminal music video on MTV. And then after that, kind of a nothingness for a long time. And then I think she came back into my life when I was a teenager. Maybe I heard her Across the Universe cover, but I also had a friend.
I remember that distinctly.
Beautiful cover. One of my favorite covers of a Beatles song. I think she did a beautiful job with that.
It was featured in that film with Julianne Moore.
Was it featured in Pleasantville? Is that the film?
Pleasantville, film?
Yeah, I've never seen it.
Yeah.
But I just kind of have a connection.
I used to love that film. It's probably dated quite badly, but... Maybe.
Yeah, I think the MP3 file that I had, the download of that song, had the Pleasantville like cover, you know, like the poster for the film was the album artwork on whatever like horrible file I downloaded. But I had a friend in school, Gillian. She's probably not listening, but if she is, hi, Gillian. She really liked Fiona Apple, and she... I don't know if she maybe transferred some MP3 files to me or gave me her MP3 player or something, but this album and some other kind of random singles kind of came to me. So it's interesting. You think about Fiona Apple as a CD artist. I think about Fiona Apple as MP3 files, and not necessarily trusting that the album that you download is in the right order, that all of these songs are even on the same album. So yeah, it's really interesting that, you know, even though there's probably only maybe 10 years in the difference of like when we might've been listening to them, you know, the industry had changed so much. So that's, yeah. But then in terms of the album itself, you know, kind of listening to it, I would say I was in my early 20s, late teens, early 20s before I kind of, you know, sat down and engaged with this album as an album and not just as a collection of Fiona Apple songs that might have been mixed in with other songs. So that's kind of my history with Fiona Apple. There's a lot of other kind of complicated stuff around Fiona Apple and being a teenage girl that maybe we'll get into a little bit later, but that's sort of the history for me. But the history for her, for Fiona Apple, as we said, this is released July 23rd, 1996. It is 10 tracks, 51 minutes, 36 seconds, says Spotify. The singles from the album are Shadow Boxer, Criminal, and Sleep to Dream, although a couple of others, I think Never is a Promise and maybe Sullen Girl, were either B-sides or were released as singles in maybe some parts of the US and Australia. But those are the main three anyway. It's produced by a producer called Andrew Slater. And how Andrew Slater kind of came to be in her life, Fiona is the daughter of performers. Her father's an actor. Her mother is a singer, or was actually, I haven't check to see if they passed away, but she grew up kind of in a family that, you know, was adjacent to or very much within kind of show business. So her learning to play the piano and getting into composition was very much encouraged in this family. And she lived sort of between her mom in New York City and her dad in LA. They're separated. So she spent some time in New York City with her mom, sometimes in LA with her dad. And during maybe when she was about 14, 15 or so, she was in LA with her dad and she decided to record 3 tracks and put them on tape. She was encouraged by her dad to do this and then, you know, pound the pavements, get out there, send them out to record labels and what have you. And one of those tracks is the song Never Is a Promise from this album. And the other two are lost to time. She said in an interview at some stage that they just weren't very good songs. So she gets this this tape and she gives it to her friend who is babysitting for a music exec who works for Andrew Slater. So it goes, so it takes one tape to get from Fiona via a babysitter to Andrew Slater. And Andrew Slater hears those three songs, but I think Never Is a Promise in particular, and hears obviously the great potential of this young songwriter. There was a bit of a discussion in a podcast that I listened to called the Idio Talk podcast. I'd never listened to it before. Two men kind of talking about, I think they initially did every Radiohead album and then they did every Fiona Apple album. So I listened to their two-part podcast on Tidal. So I just want to give them credit up front that a lot of the information that I'm kind of getting is from that podcast. And it's really, really good. I really recommend listening to it. But they were saying that there was maybe a sense that Fiona, when she was writing these songs, that she wanted to sell the songs, that they weren't, that she wasn't necessarily putting these tapes into the hands of record labels for her to be a star or to be a singer. She wasn't someone who was very confident as a vocalist, even though she was encouraged a lot. But upon hearing the three tracks, Andrew Slater decided, no, she is the right person to be singing these songs. He was someone who was very surprised that such a young person kind of wrote these songs, because they are very, you know, very reflective and very deep and very, you know, literary. Her lyrics are a really big, important part of her work as well. So that's kind of how she came to be. That's kind of how Fiona Apple kind of enters the music industry. It's easy in that it doesn't take very long after she decides she wants to be discovered for her to be discovered. You know, she's still writing some of these songs at 16. The album comes out when she's like 17 or 18. Criminal music videos when she's 19. And then all of a sudden she's a superstar. So what else about the album in terms of kind of up top information? There's additional playing on most of the songs on this album by John Bryan, who you and listeners will know that I love, and I'm sure lots of listeners will be familiar with his work. He plays on this album. Oh, and importantly, he will go on to produce her next two albums, The Idler Wheel and When the Pawn. He plays vibraphone, guitar, tack piano, marimba, dulcetone, chamberlain, harp, and octagon. He is the scorer of films like Lady Bird, Punch Drunk Love, Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind, Magnolia, and many others. And he's worked with, you know, every artist you can think of. He's worked with Elliot Smith. He's worked with Kanye West for Late Registration, with Mac Miller for an album that you and I loved, the posthumous release of Circles, and many, many, many others. He's kind of ridiculously talented and multifaceted, and he's like a multi instrumentalist. He's just one of those people that kind of has music in their bones and always knows how to like get the best sound out of someone and how to like translate what someone's like imagination is trying to do, like what they're hearing in their head, trying to get that down onto a track. So he's brought in for Tidal, and they start a kind of a long relationship of working together and getting really good stuff out of one another. I've mentioned most of the album was written between when she's 14 and 16. And I think that's kind of the backstory in terms of like, you know, I mean, who's on the album, who's producing it.
Isn't that so interesting though? Like it's worth repeating how young she was when she did this.
Yeah.
She wrote these songs and how, you know, her prodigious she was as a songwriter, and how individual and really how fully formed she was as a songwriter as well. So
I think it says something of the time. And I know it's easy to kind of compare the past to now and, you know, complain about now, but someone like Fiona Apple getting the kind of radio play that she got, the kind of play on MTV that she got, you know, those institutions like radio as an institution for alternative music, alternative rock music, and MTV as an institution for that as well. Like, you can't understate the impact that all of that had on a career like Fiona Apple's. Like, the fact that she had hits from an album that is kind of as strange in terms of its influences and in terms of its kind of production decisions as this album, you know, you can't kind of underscore enough the influence that, you know, those kinds of institutions and the trust that is put in audiences for somebody who is a little bit strange and a little bit alternative. I just don't see where an album like Tidal would fit right now, except for in much more like niche kind of playlists.
This is it. So I actually read a piece this week on a Substack, Darren Hemmings, who does Motive Unknown. He does marketing stuff for Runs the Jewels, and he's been at Ireland Music Week, and he does a Substack called Network Notes, and he talked about this mega and micro culture era that we're in, where these like massive artists like Taylor Swift are even more massive than they ever were, and then everyone else is just skulking around in the background, kind of on their small little scenes, trying to just make a living or whatever. And there's no middle ground. So the middle ground now is gone, but back then would have been radio, MTV, Fiona Apple being a successful artist selling 2.9 million copies of her debut album. You know what I mean? Like, obviously, people don't buy albums in the same way anymore. So even charts don't make the same sense that they used to at all. All these kind of things that make a difference in terms of where we're at. It's a different kind of culture now. And so that's one of the benefits of the 90s, I guess, in a lot of ways. I mean, people made money, and they also were able to make a career, and they were able to get in front of a large group of audience. Now we're just largely narrow casting to others as opposed to broadcasting the way we used to. So that kind of feeds into Fiona Apple's popularity and a lot of artists in the 90s and where they were at.
Yeah, I've never heard that word narrow casting before, but that really feels like what is happening in music now. Like, the commercial success of Fiona Apple just wouldn't be possible in the current kind of music models that we have now. Like, she would certainly be successful in, you know, we don't even really have something called alternative music anymore. I suppose she would be narrow casted to young women and engage with in a way that, like, someone like, I don't know, even recently in the past week, like Chappell Roan with like young queer women, or the way that Boy Genius were kind of, you know, picked up and kind of launched into that. Like, they're sort of the most popular alternative group that we can kind of think of now.
Yeah.
But even at that, you know, my mom wouldn't know who Boy Genius are, but she would have known who Fiona Apple was in the 90s. So it's just an interesting way to kind of like look at those kind of differences in how music gets into your hands. And we are obviously by no means saying that the music industry in the 1990s was perfect.
No, but
there was a lot to be angry about.
Just culturally, it was very different, and how artists got through the noise is very different. Like, now we're looking at the playlist that Fiona Apple is featured on Spotify. You've got Duvet Day, Ethereal, and Frolic, which is frolicking joylessly, freely, and ethereally in this world, which features Criminal on this, along with The Last Dinner Party, Suki Waterhouse. Chappell Roan is there as well.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's like,
yeah, The Last Dinner Party as well. Like, that those kind of, like, I feel like that would be the group that she was in. Yeah. Do you know, if she was to kind of emerge today, because we see her there frolicking with the Last Dinner Party.
Femme Fatale as well, apparently. Not sure about that one.
Yeah. It's these, you know, look, I guess, like, this is, you know, we're not going off topic, but there is a kind of a way in which Fiona Apple is engaged that she, I don't actually have the quote. I forgot to look it up, but it's in my kind of recent memory over the past number of years that she spoke about how her music was being used. I believe she removed her music from being able to be used on TikTok because she didn't want her music to become emblematic of a kind of I suppose it's the sad girl conversation that we saw with Mitski and with this kind of, you know, wallowing, but like the kind of the commodification of the sad girl aesthetic, which I do think that she was at risk of kind of being brought into that sort of realm as well. And that's a very complicated space as well, so I won't linger on it too much, but you do find her on playlists like that, you know, Sad Girl Saturday and, you know, the playlists that are put into my Spotify feed. So, and I mean, we mentioned her age.
Narrowcasted to you.
Narrowcasted to me, indeed. Yeah, me and people like me, individuals. So, yeah, I mean, it is important to talk about her age, but I don't want to linger too much on it in that, like, I do think that sometimes this album retrospectively is discussed in terms of it being an album that is so good for a teenager. And a lot of people resist that. A lot of writers resist that, and quite rightly. Like, this is just a good, like, a very, very good album. There are songs on this album that are masterpieces of songwriting, and it's not, you know, it's neither because nor despite her being a teenager and her years. But I think the older I get, and one of the reasons why I chose this album for the listening party and not, for example, Fetch the Bolt Cutters or one of her kind of like middle career albums, is that I guess the older I get and the further away from my own teenage girl self, the more I can kind of appreciate how she articulates the seriousness of what the world is when you are a teenage girl, the kind of jeopardy and the danger and the stuff that you kind of you feel, and you might not, I mean, particularly when I was growing up as a teenager in the 2000s, you might not yet have words for, you might not yet, you know, be calling yourself a feminist, you might not really be able to articulate the kind of dangers that you feel yourself being in. And there's a quote, I can't remember who said it, but it was quoted in an article about Fiona Apple, about there being a time when you move out of childhood and into girlhood, and your adolescence becomes a gendered experience. And this is something that I really feel with my, you know, adult woman brain engaging with a lot on Tidal, that the teenage girl experience is not a frivolous thing. It is not unserious. It is actually a very, very serious encounter with the world and with institutions and with your own gender and your body and all of these things that are changing very, very rapidly to a young person, a young mind who doesn't yet have the language to explore it. And then here comes Fiona Apple with, you know, very much telling her story, but it is so resonant. And it is a really, I think, powerful thing to hear a teenager take themselves very seriously and take their problems very seriously. And crucially, for a teenage girl to come out the gate and say, I take my perspective very seriously, because it is a worthy perspective for everybody to engage with. And I think that's why I chose this album, because not only do we see, you know, a teenage girl taking herself seriously, we see an industry reckoning with that. We see an industry who that is not, I suppose, very used to teenagers like Fiona Apple being in the public eye. And sometimes they reckoned with that very, very poorly. Sometimes they reckoned with it very well. But either way, you know, how we dealt with Fiona Apple in the 90s is very, very emblematic of the 90s. So, yeah, I don't know if you've kind of any thoughts on that, but that's, I think, why I chose.
Yeah, well, it's something we've touched on before in terms of, like, you know, how Britney was treated, or, you know, it just, there's always female artists, female singer-songwriters always treated a little bit differently, and a little bit like, oh, she's crazy, oh, she's kooky, oh, she's whatever, you know, that's what the narrative, what the dominant narrative was at the time, a lot of the time, wasn't it? So it was like,
yeah,
they had to be in that box almost, which was, you know, they can't be a fully formed, interesting, contradictory person. It's like, you have to be, you're the crazy ex-girlfriend or whatever, you know, like that kind of vibe.
Yeah, you are either Britney dancing in a school uniform in Hit Me Baby One More Time, or you are Fiona Apple, who is, you know, considered to be the crazy one. And that is very much something that will kind of follow her, like, throughout her career. I suppose now is a good time to maybe talk a little bit about, like, how people wrote about her in the 90s. This is actually from a little bit later. This is a review of When the Pawn by Piers Martin for The Enemy. It's been scrubbed from the Enemy, but I found a link to it on the Wayback Machine through a blog.
Oh, and, wow.
Yeah.
Deep diving.
Yeah, this blog, I will link, I'll send it to you to link in the show notes, because this is where they have collated a lot of, you know, really shitty stuff that has been written about Fiona Apple. But here's a review. I'll read the whole thing because it's quite short, for When the Pawn. And how would you like your emotion? Raw, naked, intense? Brr, it's a chilly domain in which the multi-million selling ice queens of self-indulgent Ally McBeal-themed cosmetic angst operate. But you have to hand it to the kooky crew of Tori, Alanis, and the troubled Ms. Apple. They know their market, although probably not quite as well as their market knows them. For these ladies, and LA-based 24-year-old Apple is no exception, leave no emotional stone unturned in their cathartic quest for neo-hippie, feminist light, quote, meaning, in their, like, totally crazy lives. And for her second album of Amos aping MTV-branded Lilith Fair fodder, the barmiest, prettiest pretender to Tory's throne of corporate crackpot chic deals unashamedly in that tired and trusted heavyweight heart-tugging currency, relationships. So it's been a frantic 4 years for Fiona since her debut title, poured its bruised musings over a generation of sensitive saps, half of which appear to have been spent writing this record's staggering 75 word long title. It's poetry, don't you know? The other half spent playing with the dark might of glossy trip hop and surging power ballads and opaque you-like platitudes bereft of mirth. Still, that's Fiona Apple, fruit by name, fruitcake by nature.
Wow. Okay.
So just to reiterate, that's a review of an album that doesn't mention a single song on the album, doesn't mention a single instrument, doesn't mention anything except how much this person, and his name is Piers Martin, 5 out of 10, by the way, has a distaste for Tori Amos, Alanis Morissette, Fiona Apple, the kind of Lilith Fair feminist alternative rock music. And this wasn't, you know, very like out of the ordinary. Canthardlydress.com/ they did Fiona Apple dirty in the 90s is the web address of the blog. There was also a piece in Spin when Fiona was the cover story in 1997. That is also, I don't know, just sort of like very, a little bit leering, a little bit sneery, a little bit sort of, what's the word? When you speak down to someone because they're young, patronizing, that's the word. And there's a New York Times piece in 1997 that opens, the pouty bee-stung lips, the taut, pierced belly exposed by a flouncy shirt, the cascading honey brown hair, and those eyes. Is this the next waif supermodel? No, turn the volume up on MTV loud enough to hear Fiona Apple sing. She may look like a cross between Christy Turlington and Kate Moss, but Ms. Apple, a 19-year-old singer and pianist, has a voice and a message that makes her looks irrelevant. And the title of that article is A Message Far Less Pretty Than the Face. So we are in a world here of just, you know, obsession over the way that Fiona Apple looks, obsession about her youth. But what I sort of observe in how people respond to Fiona, and I suppose now would be a good time to maybe talk about the Criminal music video, is a kind of a discomfort about maybe the fact that her gaze is looking back. So there isn't really a problem when we're looking, you know, as grown people in the music industry at Britney Spears dancing around her school in a school uniform, because her gaze doesn't seem to be coming back at us. But with Fiona Apple and then the Criminal music video, and obviously how her body looks and what she's singing and what she's saying and the kind of environment that she's in, there is something of a challenge to kind of look at her and a challenge to engage with her as a teenage girl. And it's really uncomfortable, and it made a lot of people really uncomfortable. This music video was directed by Mark Romanek. It was a controversial music video. He directed Closer and The Perfect Drug by Nine Inch Nails, Johnny Cash's cover of Hurt by Nine Inch Nails, Can't Stop by Red Hot Chili Peppers. This is just from his Wikipedia page. Black Tie, White Noise and Jump They Say by David Bowie. Are You Gonna Go My Way by Lenny Kravitz, Devil's Haircut by Beck, Rain and Bedtime Story by Madonna, Scream by Michael and Janet Jackson, 99 Problems and Picasso Baby by Jay-Z, Speed of Sound by Coldplay, Criminal by Fiona Apple, Shake It Off by Taylor Swift and Sandcastles by Beyoncé. So a long, very diverse career in music videos. But I think there was a Refinery 29 piece in which the author writes, sorry, this is an interview. Apple has said that she writes her songs for herself. They are merely extensions of her journal set to music. And when a female pop star rejects the use of her sexuality as the primary bartering chip for stardom, a temptation plenty of women on the verge of fame have a hard time passing up, it's a powerful statement against the status quo. Alas, the video for Criminal seemed to tell another story altogether. A gaunt-looking Apple slinks around in various stages of undress, naked in the bathtub, furiously disrobing in the kitchen, lounging underneath, on top of, and in between semi-naked, listless men. Watching it, you'd be forgiven for feeling the urge to cry, hypocrite. What is she here if not a sexual nymph embodying the very thin, glam, false image she purports to reject? In interviews following the video's release, Apple admitted to feeling uncomfortable about it. It's not because of the perceived lascivious imagery. The sexual deviance on display accurately captured the guilt she felt for using sex to get her way, but it was also a source of pleasure for her. It was her body image that gave her pause. So I think I think that sort of like really encapsulates like what it is that I mean by the tension that is inherent in that video, because I understand the urge to look at that music video and call her a hypocrite. And I understand the problems that a lot of girls and women have with even engaging with that music video. Like it's still a music video. I find it very difficult to watch. And it's not because I don't think that she's empowered or anything like that, but it is like, it was a sign of the times, and it was she is very, very, very thin, and her thinness is something that is lingered upon in the video. And I think a lot of women my age and maybe a little bit older have very complicated relationships with the Criminal music video. But I think as I've gotten older and as I've come to understand the song a little bit more, I can appreciate the vision a little bit more. I can appreciate that she is doing the thing that she's you know, struggling with within the song, Criminal being a song about feeling guilty about using your sexuality in order to get what you want. And yeah, it's a difficult video to kind of engage with because it's very beautiful and interesting, and it's a really rich text, but it's also just one that I find it difficult to watch without, you know, feeling like a teenager again and feeling like, oh God, Is this what it is? Is this what we need to be? Is this what's beautiful? So it's a tough one. I don't know, like what the male perspective on the Criminal video would be, something that I'm definitely interested in, because you will give the male perspective, Niall, because you represent all men.
I can give you a male perspective.
Please do.
I mean, it's a very 90s music video, isn't it? It's very, yeah, like even the style of it. Mark Romanek, as you said, again, I've mentioned it before, but I had, and I still do have them somewhere, I think, these DVDs of directors' music videos. I had his, the work of Mark Romanek, the work of the director Mark Romanek, 2005. So it was all, I think, I wonder, was this on actually as well? I'm not sure if it was. I think, yeah, I mean, I probably don't feel that as strongly as you do, because there's something very, like, faux glamorous about it. There's something very like listless, like Hollywood listless, LA listless about the whole thing, you know.
A bit wild child.
The roaming camera, in the spotlight camera kind of in at this party, which, you know, everyone is asleep or she's the only one engaged. I think I got that. I think I got that idea that she was fully awake, and she was the only one that was really truly present, and that's sometimes how I feel about it. Because when I guess if you think about it, like showing skin, or even in a video, or like she's in a shower there, like it's, or in a bath, whatever it is, you know, it was par for the course in the 90s. So like,
yeah,
there was nothing unusual about that.
And that's so interesting, right? It's not unusual to have a girl, she was 19 when the video was shot, to have a 19-year-old girl sexualized on television in a music video is not unusual in 1996. That is not a new thing. But there is something, the undercurrent of the video, that I think is really smart and really reflective of her music. And I think Mark Romanek got really right for such an early video in her career, that there is this undercurrent of darkness, of sleaze. And I know we use the term indie sleaze a lot, but, you know, sleaze in its kind of, in not what she's doing, but in what she is challenging us as the viewer to see and to reflect on how it is that we are looking at her. So for teenage girls, you know, straight teenage girls, it was, you know, the idealization of a body that is sick. It's the idealization of a body that is very much unwell. And when we see it in other areas of culture, like catwalks or on red carpets, it is completely accepted, but there's something about how it's presented here that makes us uncomfortable or challenges our idealization of that body. And then I think for men, she is very much looking back at the viewer, and it's not, you know, she's referred to as kind of gaunt looking and nymph-like, but she, like the nymph-like element of it, I kind of understand, because there is like a lot of mischief in what she's doing, and there's a lot of challenge. And she does, I think you're right in saying that, like, she is the only one awake. She is the only one that is, she's sort of crawling around, you know, the after sesh, like trying to get, you know, get what she can out of it. And it's a really complicated and tricky music video, but it is, because of all of those reasons, a really, really important music video from the 1990s, and a very, very important song. And I don't want to talk too much about the video without actually talking about the song. So maybe will we listen to Criminal? Will we listen to a bit of Criminal, and then we'll talk about it. I mean, yeah, like when we talk about Criminal, it is easy to kind of linger on the video. But as a song, you know, it is one of the defining songs of the 1990s. I think you can say easily it was a song that was written, as the lore goes, in 45 minutes when the label asked her to write a more obvious single. And it's one of the kind of the bigger songs on the album in terms of the instrumentation. There's a lot thrown at it, but I think it really, really works. It's got, you know, tons of key changes in it. It's a very unsteady song, but it's so anchored. And I think, you know, those piano chords in particular, her voice, obviously, the, you know, coming out the gate with "I've been a bad, bad girl," you know, it's just like, it's so reflective of like what is a hit for an artist like me, you know, this like 18-year-old, what is it that the labels want, that the label wants? Okay, they want me to be a bad, bad girl. And I love that. I love that as the opening line. I love her vocals in it. It's a beautiful, unsteady, kind of a freak of a song, you know. It's sort of like a Frankenstein of so many genres and so many styles. There's a lot of jazz in there, there's a lot of alternative rock in there, you know. In even in the outro, we hear like we hear like a little interpolation of that. Like it's really, really all over the place, but it's so anchored in her voice and in the piano. And just sort of trying to listen to it like a bit more critically, or in a way that we can kind of talk about it, like divorce it from its context, this week has been really fun, because I've found myself like noticing so much more about it, so much of the like production decisions, so much John Bryan all over it as well, and kind of hearing that collaboration. How did you feel going back to this song?
I mean, it still holds up. It's a brilliant song on its own, and it's brilliant song in the context of the album, and it's a brilliant song in the context of her discography. Like you said, for all those reasons, it is. I love that. Yeah, she's playing with that form of like expectations and who she wants to be and who she's expected to be. And Careless with a Delicate Man is good as well. Subversion of the norm as well. And then obviously admission of guilt as well, of like feeling bad. And is that what the men want? Is that what the industry wants, you know? Like confessional. So yeah, it's a great song.
And such a strong understanding of like a dynamic, like a relationship dynamic. And important to note, like she wrote all of these songs before she had a relationship with somebody. And it's just such an astute sort of observation of a dynamic that was not really explored in culture very much. And to kind of, you know, subvert the more traditional gender roles that we would expect from a song like Criminal, you know, we would expect a 16 or 17 year old to write a song like Criminal from the perspective of, you know, you have hurt me, you're the criminal,
yeah,
what you need is a good defense. But exactly, she doesn't do that, because she's writing from a very real place. Of this song was inspired by a kind of a very deep friendship that she had with a man, and kind of reflecting on that. But it's just so, and it's not, again, like not for her age, but it is such a, like, because these dynamics exist in your world when you were a teenager, but that she can articulate it in a way that even to me now as a 33-year-old woman, I find astounding. Like if a 30-year-old wrote this song, I would still find it astounding in how it kind of, you know, articulates a very specific relationship dynamic. And just her, the power that she gains in doing that is incredible. And we kind of feel that on like Shadowboxer as well. I think that is a song that is like so timeless for a lot of women and can mean a lot of different things at a lot of different times in your life as well. But yeah, like Criminal is just, you know, it's important for us to kind of give it its dues. I think definitely.
Yeah. Like, yeah, I mean, and that idea of like shadowboxing, like sparring with your partner almost, you know, and that's obviously brings up, you know, more physical violence connotations as well, you know, in those terms. And that's, you know, they're heavy topics to be dealing with, you know. But I think even like if you think about like the way to Sleep the Dream, and actually if you don't mind, if it's okay with you, I might play a bit of Sleep the Dream, because I think
absolutely,
yeah, the intention when it comes in is so like, it's got some darkness to it, and it's got some like forthrightness to it. It's really present. I love the bass in it. Sure, I'll just play the start of it and you can hear what I mean.
I tell you how I feel, but you don't care. I say tell me the truth, but you don't dare. You say love is a hell you cannot bear. And I say give me my back and then go there for all I care. I got my feet on the ground and I don't go to sleep to dream. You got your head in the clouds, you're not at all what you seem. This mind, this body and this voice cannot be stifled by your deviant ways. So don't forget what I told you, don't go around. I got my own hell to raise. I have never been so insulted in all my life.
Just wanted to get that line in there. I've never been so insulted in my life. You know, it's like there's an anger there, and but she's really channeled that anger into a very strong lyrics as well. You like give me mine back and then go there for all I care. You know, I got my own hell to raise. Yeah, it's a real statement of intent in terms of an album. When it starts, you're like, whoa, there's real anger, but like a justified anger, obviously, not like the cliched 90s anger. You know, it's like it's real. It's the intention is there. She's in control.
I have a quote that I want to read you because it is an intersection of three interests and intersects with our last album that we looked at for listening closely. This is a quote from Kanye West to Fiona Apple in Interview Magazine in October 2005. He says, "Now, when I listen to your shit, I hear similarities. I actually wanted to work with him, John Bryan, so that I could be like the rap version of you. That was one of my main goals. The albums that inspired me for Late Registration were your first one, Tidal and Portishead's Dummy, but especially your lyrics and how you sing. How is your vocabulary so ill? Were you tight in vocabulary in your school?" So he's saying that to Fiona Apple about Tidal, but he apparently, allegedly, I read somewhere else, but I don't have the quote in front of me now. Apparently, it was how she kind of rap speaks at the beginning of Sleep to Dream, and he says she sounds like 18 feet tall or something. She sounds like she's singing from the top of a mountain, and that's how he wanted to sound on Late Registration. So it's so incredible to think an artist like Kanye West, who we would not, like, you know, there's the John Bryan kind of intersection there, but not an artist that we would necessarily think of as being, you know, being particularly inspired by someone like Fiona Apple, but he really, really was. And he wanted to sound like her. He wanted to sound like the rap version of her. And it was this song that did it for him. And so, you know, coming out the gate, as you said, with this anger and with this sort of like, you know, this is the first song on the album, and it's kind of like she's just like, oh, I'm fed up. Like, and this is our introduction to Fiona Apple. It's like, oh, I'm sick of this, you know, go to hell. It's an incredible opening song. It's an incredible statement. I love those drums at the beginning. I like how 90s it sounds, but if I heard it today, I think I would still feel like it was current, but it, you know, production wise, it's very of the time, I think. Yeah.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Yeah, maybe we'll talk a little bit about Shadow Boxer, the first single actually from the album. Maybe we'll have a little listen to it.
Once my lover, now my friend. What a cruel thing to pretend. What a cunning way to condescend. Once my lover, but now my friend. Oh, you creep up like the cloud, and you set my soul at ease. then you let your love abound, and you bring me to my knees. Oh, it's evil, babe, the way you let your grace enrapture me.
With Shadowboxer, it's like obviously the lyrics are so I'm really trying to avoid beyond her years. I don't mean that. They are of her years. She wrote them. But they are so applicable to sort of anybody in who have kind of had relationships, or, you know, it makes me think of like somebody, you know, at the end of a very, very, very long relationship when they're just ready to give up. They're not ready to fight for it anymore. And it's so evocative. But for me, in this song, it's her voice that really carries it for me. It's, you know, how she uses her breath even between the notes. She just sounds, it's of jazz. You know, she's someone who's very, very inspired by jazz music. The chords that she's using, what she's doing with her voice, how she can go from being very gentle and just kind of sticking with one note for like a long time in this way that sounds like she's sighing, and then just jump up and suddenly have all this energy for a new line. It's like she treats every single lyric as its own little world and thinks about how it is best carried. You know, it's such an amazing song. You know, that chorus is incredible. You sort of land in the chorus with her. You're like, oh, you know, It's amazing.
Yeah, it's a great song.
Great song. What else did we want to talk about? Let's talk about the VMAs.
Oh, yeah. So
we'll talk about more of these songs, but I think it's a good time to talk about the VMAs.
So. Yeah, well, let's play the clip from... I mean, this is, I was spending some time looking at some various Fiona Apple interviews this week, just to see what kind of the vibe was. As I said, a lot of MTV stuff. And as you can tell, she won an MTV award for Best New Artist. And I got to play what she said here on the night when she came up. Obviously, context for all of this is Fiona Apple at the MTV Music Awards. The MTV Music Awards were not serious. And every now and again, somebody would say something serious. I remember one of my favorites, Beastie Boys, saying something about Tibet. This happened every now and again. And Fiona Apple in 1997, acceptance speech is one example. Here we go.
Man, oh man. I didn't prepare a speech, and I'm sorry, but I'm glad that I didn't, because I'm not going to do this like everybody else does it. Because everybody that I should be thanking, I'm really sorry, but I have to use this time. See, Maya Angelou said that we as human beings at our best can only create opportunities. And I'm going to use this opportunity the way that I want to use it. So what I want to say is, everybody out there that's watching, everybody that's watching this world is bullshit. And you shouldn't model your life. Wait a second. You shouldn't model your life about what you think that we think is cool and what we're wearing and what we're saying and everything. Go with yourself. Go with yourself. And there's just a few people that I want to say something to. I want to say, Mama, I love you. I'm so glad that we're becoming friends. Amber, I love you. You're my sister. You're my best friend. Andrew Slater, no one else could have produced this album and no one else did. And it's just stupid that I'm in this world, but you're all very cool to me, so thank you very much. And I'm sorry for all the people that I didn't thank, but man, it's good. Bye.
Man, it's good. Bye. In an interview with The Guardian 4 years ago around vegetable colours, she was asked about this acceptance speech. And she said, that speech was a huge moment in my life that I will never, ever regret. And that I have never regretted, no matter how embarrassed I might have been to be in at a certain point. I knew it was one of those moments where you have to be a really good parent to yourself and go, this is a time you can get out there and just say it. You have to, because if you don't do it now, you set a precedent for yourself at these things. You shut up your entire life at school. You took all this shit and you were quiet. Look how it made you feel. You're at this thing now, this magnified high school class, and now you got a chance to go up and say something. Don't be shy. No matter how it comes out, let it come out. So I'm really glad I did that. And I think that's set me on a good path.
Absolutely. And it did set her on a good path. You know, there was backlash to this. I think in the room, you can hear people kind of cheering and so on. But outside of this, how it was written about, there was a New Yorker review of Extraordinary Machine by Sasha Frere, where they note that the speech made her sound more insulted than grateful. And I think that kind of misses the point of what Fiona Apple was trying to do in that speech. She was grateful, and she was happy that she gets to do this, but she wasn't just going to accept the award and pretend that, you know, people looking up to her is something that she wants to happen. And I think it's even something that, like, when we reviewed Fetch the Bowl Cutters, I can't remember if we kind of talked about how much she is engaging with, like, her young self on that album, and particularly her reflections on the music industry. But there was a lyric from the song Fetch the Bowl Cutters where she says, I thought being blacklisted would be grist for the mill until I realized I'm still here. I grew up in the shoes they told me to fill, shoes that were not made for running up that hill. And I need to run up that hill. I need to run up that hill. I will, I will, I will. And elsewhere on that album, we have songs like Under the Table, which deals with kind of misogyny in the entertainment business, and Shamika about her being, you know, encouraged by a young black girl in her school saying that she has potential. And just, you know, looking with a grown-up lens at all these incidents from her youth and from her childhood and her relationship with, like, ostracization and difference. And I think that, you know, this is a really important moment in all of that. Like she says, you know, it sets a precedent for the rest of her career. And I think that, unfortunately, the backlash to this incident also set a precedent in terms of how she is written about and how she is discussed as a young woman who is ungrateful and bratty. And, you know, I've even seen mentioned that people were saying that she was, you know, inarticulate in how she spoke. But absolutely something I not. Love about that speech is that there is the sort of, you know, there's the ums and ahs of a teenage girl. You can hear her youth in how she's talking, but she is so centered in the moment. Like, her voice does not waver. She has a message and she's going to say it, and she hasn't written it down. And there is something so sort of carefree in that that decision to just go up and say whatever it was that she wanted to say. And I love that. I think her youth is all over that, but I love it all the more for understanding what would happen with the rest of her career.
See, that's it. You wouldn't say that kind of stuff with a bit of age, maybe. You wouldn't the kind of things, like saying the things out loud that you maybe are thinking. And I want to play this video for you because she does a similar thing here on The Tonight Show with Jay Leno, where she is interviewed and she kind of just, yeah, I think it's a good example. I'll play it here.
Hey, Fiona, nice job.
Thank you.
How are you? This is the nerve-wracking part, huh?
Yeah, I mean, I was just sitting upstairs and, like, I was watching the other segments and I was saying, you know, I'm so glad that I'm not, like, an actress or a comedian or something like that, because then I'd have to talk and that'd be really nerve-wracking and all I have to do is sing a song. And then I came downstairs and they're like, so Jay wants to talk to you for about a minute.
Oh, sure.
I was like, oh, no.
Well, you know what I'm wondering? How did you...
I mean, not that I don't want to talk to you.
No, I know how shy you are.
How do you even get discovered?
No, I'm not shy. I'm just like, that's like a big misconception about me. I'm not shy. I just don't speak if I don't have anything to say.
Oh, I see.
I think that's what tact is. Tact is the art of saying nothing when there's nothing to say. So I have tact. It's not that I'm shy.
Oh, so you're tact. So you're tactful. And the CD is terrific. Congratulations on everything that's happened here.
There you go.
Oh, Fiona.
It's like the precociousness of youth there is like what allows her to say that, where other people would be like, no, I might come across weird if I say that, or like I might come across differently if I say, but no, she's just being herself. She's just like, I don't have anything to say. So, you know.
I think that clip brings us really nicely to another song on the album called Sullen Girl, which is sort of about a misconception of Fiona in, you know, when she's writing it, I guess, in school and in her family and in her kind of community, that she is a sullen, a quote unquote sullen girl. Maybe we'll take a little listen to that.
Under the halls, along the walls, and under my breath, I say to myself, I need fuel to take flight. There's too much going on.
So I think this sort of this misconception that she talks about in that clip of her being shy or not wanting to speak or anything is dealt with really well in this song. I'll give a content warning here. I'm going to talk about her sexual assault, so maybe just skip ahead a minute or so. But in the second verse, the lyrics, is that why they call me a sullen girl? They don't know I used to sail the deep and tranquil sea, but he washed me ashore and took my pearl and left an empty shell of me. Fiona Apple says, I'm not sure where the quote is from, but it's the quote that's on the Genius page. She says, the second verse is, I went through a really hard time when I was a very, very cold person. I didn't like to be near people. When I was 12, I was raped by a stranger. And that's what this song is basically about, because I felt like everyone in my life thought there was something wrong with me. And it was just my wondering, was that what changed me? Like the second verse, is that why they call me the sullen girl? They used to know, but they don't know I used to sail the deep and tranquil sea, but he washed ashore and took my pearl and left an empty shell of me. And it was really just because I felt like, well, I used to be this really lighthearted person, and I am a lighthearted person, but everyone looks at me and they think I'm a really serious and depressed and sullen. Do I come off that way because of this experience? It was something that caused me a lot of pain. And I just feel like, is that why I'm being misunderstood? So like this sort of image that she had, I guess, as being a bit of a troublemaker, a bit broody, a bit, you know, sullen, and, you know, coming out the gate with, you know, your second song on your album called Sullen Girl and on your debut record is quite something. And I think that, you know, even if we didn't have this context, that this song is, or at least in part about her sexual assault, it is still, it is also just kind of saying a lot about how we expect young women to behave and what is politeness for a young woman. What does that look like? Does it look like pleases and thank yous, or does it look like smiling and being receptive of people talking to you? And, you know, she's a teenage girl in the music industry as well, where, you know, even looking at the people who were involved in this album, all of whom I will say she has had long relationships with. So I'm not saying anything bad about them. But, you know, she is a young girl surrounded by men, and there is an expectation of how you should behave. And if you behave in a way that seems at all ungrateful or shy or unwilling to kind of play the game of the music industry, you are called sullen or you are called moody or whatever it is. And she just deals with that so quickly and so early in her career that I think it's a very interesting decision. But yeah, did you have any other interviews that you came across that you liked or wanted to play?
There's a compilation of loads of bits that I looked at as well, which is worth a look as well. There's all the early kind of chats, because after that, after she did less and less interviews as she went on, to the point where I think there's only two on the last album, the New Yorker profile, which we definitely referenced before, which is really good background for Vegetable Cutters, and then the very brief kind of Q&A back and forth stuff, and some of the text stuff on from the Guardian one. But yeah, the Emily Nussbaum New Yorker one is pretty, is a required reading, I think, if you're interested in Apple, but have more to do with her later work. And
if you're just someone who's interested in profiles as a genre, it's a really, really well written.
So much information in it. There's so much
incredible
biography in it.
And it's the kind of thing that you read and you're like, yes, this is why we need to be paying journalists to spend a lot of time with a person and not just do a kind of a Q&A style interview, especially somebody like Fiona Apple. And, you know, in the hands of a very good profile writer, they can be so literary and revealing and brilliant. I must return to that. I haven't read it probably since 2020, but it's such a brilliant profile. Yeah, I guess, you know, we're probably coming to the end of this chat. We'll obviously chat more about the album when we are doing our listen closely party. But something else that I wanted to just sort of note is the influence of John Lennon, who Fiona Apple says is to her a god. And I think that you can kind of hear John Lennon throughout this album in terms of her tastes and how she writes songs, but also the influence of Maya Angelou. We heard her name check her in the VMA speech, but there's a really nice conversation with Jen Pelly that she had for Pitchfork. I'm not sure what year it was, but she says, "My singing self was born out of singing Maya Angelou poems to myself at night going to sleep." Jen Pelly asks, "Do you remember which poems?" And she says, "Well, a very relevant one to me now is Still I Rise. I remember singing part of one that went, picking them up and laying them down, getting to the next town, baby." Jen Pelly asks, "How else would you describe your relationship to language?" And she answers, "There was a book that I once bought like 15 copies of that I love so much, the Cambridge Encyclopedia of Language. But I have this horrible thing where I don't retain information that I read. I read War and Peace because I read this article about the old Russian couple who did the translation. They translated a bunch of different books. And I just thought that was the sweetest life. You and your spouse poring over these classic works of literature and talking about it and interpreting it together. Like, how do we say this is the right way? This is a really beautiful romantic life." And I just love hearing her talk about language. I love hearing anything that she has to say about how she writes lyrics and the kinds of influences, the breadth of influences that she is drawing from. But Maya Angelou is someone that has kind of stuck with her throughout her entire career. So just to kind of note Maya Angelou's kind of presence on this album and her presence throughout Fiona Apple's career as well. I think if you don't have another song, or I mean, we can play two, but another song that I wanted to kind of play here is Never Is a Promise, because as I said at the start of the episode, this was a song that landed her the deal, basically. One of three that did, and its presence here and the absence of the other two might suggest that this was the one that did it. It sort of doesn't sound like everything else on the album. It's a very, very lush piano part, and I think her vocals in it are probably the most delicate that she sounds across the entire album. And it's a song that when I was younger, it wouldn't have been one of the songs that I listened to a lot on it. I was sort of interested in more of the like alternative rock sounding Fiona Apple. But this is a song that has grown with me a lot and has become actually just one of my favorite Fiona Apple songs. So yeah, this is Never Is a Promise. You know, the classical piano training really coming out here. I'm really part of the sound of that song. But it is, I find her vocals, and I think this is the youngest she sounds on the album, and it's so interesting because I think lyrically it is some of the most sort of astute and deep and really strongly observational work that she's doing on the album. Mm. So there's this sort of tension between, you know, there's just something in it that just makes me think, my God, like how can someone so young feel so much and have so much done to them that they get to a stage where they are able to write this song? But then I always have to remind myself that being a teenage girl is serious business. And if I want one thing to come away from how I feel about this album, it is that we need to take experiences of people that are generally in culture considered to be frivolous or entertaining. We need to take those experiences seriously. And I think we're doing a little bit better in culture with that now. But I just think this song is just so beautiful. It's also just a song that I can engage with on a very surface level just for its beauty. And the piano part in particular is just so lush and so nearly show-offy. It's an incredible song. Like, it's really become one that I hold very dear in terms of like songs that I just love from her discography. And, you know, if I had to save certain songs from a flood, this would be one of them. It's incredible. And Carrion as well, which closes out the album. I'm really looking forward to hearing that in The Big Romance as well. So yeah, I don't know if you had another one that you wanted to kind of bring up or...
No, not particularly. I was interested in where, you know, do you think if somebody doesn't know Fiona Apple, should they start here? Probably a good place.
I think so. I think it is such a good... It signposts a lot of what is to come for her. A lot of the production on it is maybe a bit lusher, a bit more 90s than, like, she gets a little bit more experimental as she goes through her career. But I think the bones of who Fiona Apple is as an artist is here. And I think that it is a really, if you are someone who liked Fetch the Bolt Cutters, because I know a lot of people in my life whose first Fiona Apple album was Fetch the Bolt Cutters and they loved it, I think that this is a really lovely companion piece to that album, because as I said earlier, a lot of Fetch the Bolt Cutters is, you know, the grown woman perspective on her youth and her experiences of being a young woman and being a teenager. But here we sort of get it firsthand from her. We sort of get those experiences relatively raw and with just such beautiful turns of phrases and such incredible lyrical songwriting. So I think that those are very, very good companion albums. But absolutely, I would say, like, it's not every artist in the world, I would say, start with the debut. But if you have never listened to Fiona Apple before, I think, you know, she's only got 5 albums. There's no reason not to start with the first one because it is outstanding. And she builds on this, on the strength of this album throughout all 5 albums. There are, like, I don't even know if it is my favorite Fiona Apple album. I don't know if I have a favorite Fiona Apple album. I think it's one of those things where I get different things from different albums. I will be in a very different mood listening to the Idler Wheel compared to this, or Fetch the Bowl Cutters compared to this. But it, also, if you're someone who's interested in debut albums, which I am, it's just, it's incredible. So it's an almost perfect album in my opinion. And the imperfections come from decisions that weren't in her hand, kind of, you know, maybe leaning a little bit too much on certain instrumentation styles here and there that maybe dated a little bit, but it's a very, very small criticism. But in terms of the songwriting, in terms of the lyricism, I think it's an outstanding album. So I really look forward to sharing it with what I imagine will be a gaggle of girls in the Big Romance.
We will see. They are, as time of speaking, there are some tickets left. There are about, I think it's about 20 left. So I haven't plugged too heavily yet. So this is the idea with this. So it's on in the Big Romance in Dublin on Parnell Street, Wednesday, the 24th of April. We'll, doors about 7 o'clock. We'll play the album shortly before 8 o'clock, probably. You'll have a little chat about it, as we are having here as well, and kind of introduce the record and maybe talk a bit afterwards. And it's really, like, as we've said before, it's a really nice experience in which to take in an album. You know, it's like a kind of taking the album listening experience back. People go and watch films in the cinema. This is kind of like our version of that. It's like, really good sound system, really good place to be. You can have a drink and listen to whatever you want, or you can have whatever you want, but listen to this album with us. And so tickets are available on nylon9.eventbrite.com. Just search for Fiona Apple title listening party. I think you'll get that on Google, because really there isn't a lot of Fiona Apple news generally speaking. But she did have a feature on a new song last month. Did you happen to see this?
She is on the
new Iron and Wine song.
Didn't even know there was a new Iron and Wine song.
Yeah. And do you know what? It's worth listening to, because you can hear the difference between her now in terms of her voice and titles. So let's have a listen to All in Good Time by Iron and Wine featuring Fiona Apple.
All in good time, I trusted my eyes. Treated my losses like clouds in the sky. Finally picked on some of my size. All in good time.
All in good time, I followed my nose. Learned where to bleed when a night comes to blows. Tried on your love, then I folded those clothes. All in good time.
Throw your bread to falling birds.
Buried friends and wasted words. Something wants to eat us all alive.
All in good time, my angel came back. Paid her some money, but that didn't last.
There you go. Brand new, that came out in March.
Oh, her voice sounds so mature and incredible. It's much more, I know that we mentioned Across the Universe as a cover earlier, but if anyone hasn't seen the YouTube video of her covering The Hole of the Moon by the Waterboys, it is unbelievable. And it is one of those tracks where I really appreciate the maturity in her voice and the kind of, like, you know, all of her years behind her singing that. But when she came in that song there, I thought she sounded a little bit like Miley Cyrus, actually. Sort of like graininess to both their voices, especially as Miley's voice gets more mature as well. So, but yeah, sure. That's Fiona Apple Tidal. We look forward, as we said, to listening to it among friends in the Big Romance. So do come along if you'd like to. And there's usually people from the Discord floating around. So if you are the only one of your friends who is a Fiona Apple fan, don't be afraid to come along yourself. People are nice.
You can come on your own as well. It's obviously
people do. It's not a,
Also, people have been bringing their parents as well, which I really like.
Yeah, I love that. Vibe. More of that. I love that. So, yeah. And if you want to join the Discord, it's
patreon.com/909 gives you access to the Discord. That's where a lot of people will be talking about music and coffee and books and TV and all sorts of things, and doing meetups as well, and usually at events like this. So yeah, we give discounts to events like this as well here and there. So, you know, there's always cheaper tickets through the Patreon as well. So, but the Discord is where is the hubbub of activity, which is related to the Patreon as well. So
yeah, it's our community center.
To get that, it is. That's where you, if you want to actually talk to people about music without being shouted at, like on X or Twitter, well, this is the place to do it.
Yeah, excellent. And what I was going to say is, I don't know if we have a video games chat in that, but I'm going to start one, because yesterday I started to play Stardew Valley, and I need tips from the Discord people on when to grow tulips and when to grow parsnips and when to grow beans.
I don't know what Stardew Valley is.
Do you not? It was like right, I know nothing about
farm
video
life
games,
sim video game. Okay, I see.
Yeah, it was like, I think it was before Animal Crossing. I think I might be right in that it launched that sort of, I'm probably completely wrong, I'm sorry for video games people, but I think it launched that sort of like slow, gentle, you know, little life video game thing. So very, very enjoyable so far. I have a farm. I have a cat. His name is Monty. It's fabulous. It's great. So yeah, I'll be asking for advice in the Discord because I don't know anything about video games. Anyway. Okay.
All right. Well, that's Fiona Apple title on this week's podcast. If you want to get in touch, it's podcast@909.com. Drop us an email, say hello. But more importantly, come to the Discord. It's better. patreon.com/909. We will talk to you next week. Thank you, Andrea, for sharing your love of title with us.
Thank you, Niall. And thank you, listeners. And thank you, Georgia.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, and thank you, Georgia, for editing the podcast. Go and have yourself a nice drink. Go on. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.